Welcome. Remember something. I just remembered something. I want to remind people that what I said earlier in one of my videos, according to a leading cardiologist, and other people too, of course, the cure for diabetes, type 2 diabetes, is extended fasting. That is more than 24 hours with just water only, or water and salt or whatever, you know, but no food, just water, basically, for more than 24 hours, perhaps, you know, 3 days. Some people do longer than 3 day fasts. And, you know, this idea of, in other words, food, eating too much food is what's causing not only diabetes, type 2 diabetes, that is, it causes other things, and eventually cancer is also caused by eating too much food. That's the idea, and that's the correct answer, we believe. And fruit does not cure cancer. Fruit can cause cancer, as we know, because Steve Jobs, who got cancer, was a fruitarian. He ate only fruit. He ate fruit and nothing but fruit, and he got cancer. So eating more fruit, even though it sounds good, it's not the answer to curing cancer. Okay, so today's date, February 3rd, 2024 of the Common Era, it's 1956 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. We are meaning to start with our article. I think I want to expand this, actually, but we don't need to for the purpose of this particular thing. I can expand this all the way out to the side, probably, and make the transition, and then come back to this Arabian tradition, which we'll be able to read more easily if it's wider. We're on paragraph 2 now of the Arabian tradition, the section called Moses adopted by Pharaoh as a baby. Now the second paragraph is today's study. In reality, there is an Arab tradition which shows striking agreement with the blessed genealogy, which is our chronology, and which we should mention, this Arab tradition that describes the Pharaoh of the years of baby Moses as being or having been a former bankrupt chemist from Persia. That's how they described him. Who, fleeing from this financial difficulty, came to Egypt, where, as he practiced magic in the desert, his talent for stirring up mischief became known to Pharaoh, who rewarded him with a place in the government. Not that the Pharaoh was in the wilderness, but that this chemist was in the wilderness. And after Pharaoh gave him a position in the government, he then rose, although he was wicked, to the post of premier. Premier, it sounds like he became Pharaoh. Well, we know he became Pharaoh, too. That's because he was called Pharaoh. He was the Pharaoh, Apophis. Although it reads like a tale from 1001 Nights, that's the name of a story, 1001 Nights, entitled in English as Arabian Nights, which is probably well known to some people. Many people have heard of that, probably. The name of the Pharaoh we propose, which is, quote, unquote, Apophis. Apophis is his name, and that name is how like an archaic English term, quote unquote, apothecary. Apothecary in English means a drug merchant. Drug merchant, and compare apothecary with Apophis, how similar they are. It's rather interesting, is it not? Okay, so now we can go back. That's the end of our study in the Wild Road article. We can go back to the better width here for our other studies, and we can begin today's study with our reading from little children. It's from Ecclesiastes 10 and 3. It's the proverb that says, in whatever way the foolish one is walking, his own heart is lacking. Ecclesiastes 10 and 3. And he certainly says to everybody that he is foolish. That's interesting, isn't it? The foolish one is probably somebody who is well known to everybody. Now, it's up to our own imagination to determine whom it is to which this applies. But let's read our reading from 2 Kings for today. Oh my goodness, this is fascinating. This is our chronological information that gives us everything with regard to the fall of Samaria and the year of Hezekiah's, you know, first year in the kingship of Judah is based on this chapter. Because it says here, and it came about in the third year of Hoshea, the son of Elah, the king of Israel, that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, the king of Judah, became king. Now, importantly, we need to compare with Moses, part 2, which shows Hezekiah in 725, beginning to rule in the BCE years, 725 BCE. And it shows Hoshea. His rule ended in 719 with the fall of Samaria, and he ruled for 9 years, so 9 plus 719 should be 728, because then, but I wrote the way I did for a reason that I no longer can remember. We don't need to change the number. 729 is close to 728, but if you look at 729 compared to 725, it looks like Hezekiah began to rule in the fourth year. Is a four-year difference, not a three-year difference. Right? So, but sometimes in Hebrew, when they say the third year, they mean the fourth year. So, there may not be a contradiction there either. But 25 years old, he happened to be when he began to reign. And for 29 years, he reigned in Jerusalem. Hezekiah did. He was 25 when he began to reign. And for 29 years, he reigned in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Abi, the daughter of Zechariah. And he continued to do what was right in Jehovah's eyes according to all that David, his forefather, had done. He it was that removed the high places and broke the sacred pillars to pieces and cut down the sacred pole and crushed to pieces the copper serpent that Moses had made. For down to those days the sons of Israel had continually been making sacrificial smoke to it. Which is the copper serpent, that is. And it used to be called the copper serpent idol. They worshipped it, which they shouldn't have been doing. In Jehovah, the God of Israel, he trusted, Hezekiah did, and after him there proved to be no one like him among all the kings of Judah, even those who had happened to be prior to him. That means he was even greater than Solomon in some ways. And he kept sticking to Jehovah. He did not turn aside from following him, but he continued keeping his commandments that Jehovah had commanded Moses. And Jehovah proved to be with him. Wherever he would go out, he would act prudently, and he proceeded to rebel against the king of Assyria and did not serve him. It was he who struck down the Philistines clear to Gaza and also its territories, from the Tower of the Watchmen, clear to the fortified city. And it came about in the fourth year of Hezekiah, the king, that is the seventh year of Hoshea. So now we see, again, fourth and seventh, there's a three-year difference, apparently. So maybe Hoshea should be listed as beginning to rule 728, but I know I had a reason for saying 729, so we have to be careful. In the fourth year of Hezekiah, that is the seventh year of King Hoshea, the son of Elah, the king of Israel. The Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria, which we've already mentioned, came up against Samaria and began to lay siege to it, and they got to capture it at the end of 3 years. The end of 3 years. There's the crucial phrase. The end of 3 years. But then it says, that is the ninth year of Hoshea, right? Or the sixth year of Hezekiah, verse 10. So if it began to besiege Samaria in the fourth year of Hezekiah, and the siege ended in the sixth year, how can that be the end of 3 years? See, there's a problem, unless it could be the end of three solar years, and not quite the end of three lunar years. Because there are some occurrences, I think it's only one every 7 years, that three lunar years is longer than three solar years because of the way the lunar calendar works. But usually a lunar year is shorter than a solar year. It's just that when there's an extra month added to the lunar calendar, sometimes three lunar years can be longer than three solar years, so it could still be, since the year of the king is determined by the lunar year, it could still be in the, so it could be from the beginning of the fourth year of Hezekiah to the end of the sixth year of Hezekiah, and it could be three full solar years at the end of 3 years. And that fact is used in our determination of when Samaria fell, and we date it BCE 719, because that was the year out of every 7 years, you know, it occurs, but that's the year in which it happened, that three solar years fell within and was shorter than three lunar years. After that, the king of Assyria took Israel into exile in Assyria. All the Israelites were taken away from Israel, essentially, or, you know, yeah, and set them down in Hela and in Habor at the river Gozan and in the cities of the Medes over the fact that they had not listened to the voice of Jehovah their God. So this is Jehovah's reason why it happened. And they kept overstepping his covenant, even all that Moses, the servant of Jehovah, had commanded. They neither listened nor performed. And verse 13... we've used 12 minutes and some seconds. In the 14th year of King Hezekiah, Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah. The fascinating thing was, right, we know who the king was who besieged Samaria, right? And we know what year of Hezekiah it was that it happened. According to this chapter, we know exactly that it was the fourth year of Hezekiah when Samaria was besieged. And yesterday we learned Shalmaneser in 17 and 3 of 2 Kings had come up to begin the siege of Samaria. It was Shalmaneser. And we know quite accurately, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, we have quite a lot of knowledge about when Shalmaneser reigned, and his successor was Sargon. And we have quite detailed, we don't have detailed information about everything. That's the point. We don't know everything about really anything, but we know everything about, or a lot more about some things than other things, and that's one thing we know better than some other things. We know when Shalmaneser ruled, or when Sargon began to rule. That's what we do know that quite accurately, and it was, I'm trying to think the name of one scholar that I want, I'm trying to remember. I know his name's on the tip of my tongue, it's just slipping me, but it's slipping my mind, I mean. Or, you know, eluding me right now, but it's okay. That we know enough to know that the 14th year of Hezekiah, if that's when Sennacherib came up, and we know when the 14th year of Hezekiah was. It was 711 BCE, and that's different from what people say that was the year when Sennacherib came up. The conventional chronology says that Sennacherib came up in the year 703 BCE, not 711, but we know it has to be 711 from this. Okay? And at least this tells us, 14th year of Hezekiah, 725 minus 14, 725 minus 14 is 711. So Sennacherib at this time wouldn't have been king, because he didn't become king until 703. That's why people say that it must have been 703 that he came up, but he could be called the king, and still, people are always called the king, even if they weren't the king at the time. If they later became the king, then from then on they're called the king, even in their time before their kingship. You know, they just have the title of king. In history, they become the king of Assyria, even though at that time Sennacherib might have just been the army general, of, you know, the chief of the army. But he became king later, so he's called the king of Assyria here. In the 14th year of Hezekiah, he came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and proceeded to seize them. So Hezekiah, the king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria at Lachish, saying, I have sinned. I think it's Damian Mackay has written. Yes, Damian Mackay has written about the dating of this 14th year of Hezekiah and things like that. And he agrees with our chronology. It's not that we're the only person who says this, but Hezekiah, the king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria at Lachish, saying, I have sinned. Turn back from against me. Whatever you may impose upon me, I shall carry. Accordingly, the king of Assyria laid upon Hezekiah, the king of Judah, 300 silver talents and 30 gold talents. 300 silver talents and 30 gold talents. That's a lot of money. 300 silver talents. Oh, we have to look at an appendix to find that. Okay. Must have been a lot of money. Therefore, Hezekiah gave all the silver that was to be found at the house of Jehovah and in the treasures of the king's house. That's how much money it was. At that time, Hezekiah cut off the doors of the temple of Jehovah and the doorposts that Hezekiah, the king of Judah, had overlaid, and then gave them to the king of Assyria. He gave the doors of the temple to the king of Assyria. Imagine how sad that must have been for the Israelites, to the men of Judah, in particular in this case, to have to do. And the king of Assyria proceeded to send Tartan and Rabsaris and Rabshakeh from Lachish to King Hezekiah with a heavy military force to Jerusalem, that they might go up and come to Jerusalem. So they went up and came and stood still by the conduit of the upper pool, which is at the highway of the laundryman's field. It's a beautiful poetic statement to describe this. It sounds so interesting. The highway of the laundryman's field is the way they describe this location near Jerusalem. And they began to call out. It must have been very near, because they could call out to the king. And they called out to the king, and there came out to them Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna, the secretary, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder. Accordingly, Rabshakeh said to them, please say to Hezekiah, this is what the great king, the king of Assyria, has said. What is this confidence in which you have trusted? You have said, but it is the word of lips. There are counsel and mightiness for the war. Now, in whom have you put your trust that you have rebelled against me? The king of Assyria said, now look, you have put your trust in the support of this crushed reed, Egypt, which if a man should brace himself upon it, it would certainly enter into his palm and pierce it. That is the way Pharaoh and the king of Egypt is to all those putting their trust in him. And in case you men should say to me, it is Jehovah our God in whom we have put our trust, is he not the one whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has removed? See, he tells an untruth here. While he says to Judah and Jerusalem, before this altar you should bow down in Jerusalem. See, Jehovah didn't approve of the high places. And Jehovah only approved of the altar in Jerusalem. But Rabshakeh says that these high places were, they belonged to Jehovah, which they didn't. Then Rabshakeh goes on to say, now then, make a wager, please, with my lord the king of Assyria, and let me give you 2,000 horses to see whether you are able on your part to put riders upon them. How then could you turn back the face of one governor of the smallest servants of my lord, while you, for your part, put your trust in Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? Now, is it without authorization from Jehovah that I have come up against this place to bring it to ruin? Jehovah himself said to me, go up against this land, and you must bring it to ruin. He also claimed authority from Jehovah by saying that. Now, that part, we certainly Jehovah allowed it to happen. So, in a way, you know, he's actually serving Jehovah in some way. So that part may not be untrue entirely at all. At this, Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, and Shebna, and Joah said to Rabshakeh, speak with your servants, please, in the Syrian language, for we can listen, and do not speak with us in the Jews' language in the ears of the people that are on the wall. But Rabshakeh said to them, is it to your lord and to you that my lord has sent me to speak these words? Is it not to the men sitting upon the wall that they may eat their own excrement and drink their own urine with you men? He's talking about the siege and how when people run out of food, they get desperate for food and they, as was prophesied also, they eat their own excrement, their solid and liquid waste. They start to consume because they have nothing to eat. And Rabshakeh continued to stand and call out in a loud voice in the Jews' language, and he went on to speak and say, hear the word of the king of Assyria. This is what the king has said. Do not let Hezekiah deceive you people, for he is not able to deliver you out of my hand. And do not let Hezekiah cause you to trust in Jehovah, saying, without fail, Jehovah will deliver us, and this city will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Do not listen to Hezekiah, for this is what the king of Assyria has said. Make a capitulation to me and come out to me and eat each one from his own vine and each one from his own fig tree and drink each one the water of his own cistern until I come and I actually take you to a land like your own land, a land of grain and new wine, a land of bread and vineyards, a land of oil, olive trees and honey, and keep living that you may not die. And do not listen to Hezekiah, for he allures you, saying, Jehovah himself will deliver us. Have the gods of the nations at all delivered each one his own land out of the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath? And where are the gods of Sepharvaim, Hena, and Iva? Have they delivered Samaria out of my hand? Who are there among all the gods of the lands that have delivered their land out of my hand, so that Jehovah should deliver Jerusalem out of my hand? And that's the end of the speech of Rabshakeh. And the people kept silent and did not answer him a word, for the commandment of the king was, saying, you must not answer him. But Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the secretary, and Joah the son of Asaph the recorder, came to Hezekiah with their garments ripped apart, and told him the words of Rabshakeh. That's the end of our reading from 2 Kings. We would like to do Ezekiel chapter 42 today, if possible. And he gradually, this is a short chapter, fortunately, but we're not going to understand everything, I don't think, about these descriptions of architectural I mean, construction. How are you going to explain an architectural construction in words without diagrams? And since we don't have the diagram, it's difficult, but it's just useful to read to find out what it says about these things in the vision. This is part of a vision. This is not the actual construction at the temple in Jerusalem as it was during the days of Solomon. And it had, of course, been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, shortly before this was written by Ezekiel. It was just had been destroyed shortly before, but it was destroyed during the time of the writing of this book of Ezekiel. And he gradually brought me forth to the outer courtyard by the way toward the north, Ezekiel writes, and he proceeded to bring me to the dining room block that was in front of the separated area and that was in front of the building to the north. Before the length of 100 cubits, there was the north entrance, and the width was 50 cubits. In front of the 20 cubits that belonged to the inner courtyard, and in front of the pavement that belonged to the outer courtyard, there was gallery, opposite gallery, in 3 stories. And before the dining rooms, there was a walkway 10 cubits in width to the inside, a way of 1 cubit, and their entrances were to the north. And as for the dining rooms, the uppermost ones were shorter, for the galleries took away from them more than the lowest ones and than the middle ones as regards the building. For they were in 3 stories, and they had no pillars like the pillars of the courtyards. That is why more room was taken away than from the lowest ones and from the middle ones from the floor. In other words, the floor area was smaller as you got higher up in the building because of the structural requirement of making the building stand solidly, you know. But I'm not sure. We don't get an exact picture from this of how it was built. And the stone wall that was outside was close by the dining rooms. This element of having different stories, you know, overlapping and resting upon the lower story is talked about in 1 Kings chapter 6 and onward about the construction of the temple by Solomon. For example, you can read something there about a similar type of construction to this, perhaps. That is why more room was taken away. And the stone wall that was outside was close by the dining rooms toward the outer courtyard before the other dining rooms. Its length was 50 cubits. For the length of the dining rooms that were toward the outer courtyard was 50 cubits. And look, before the temple it was 100 cubits. And from below these dining rooms, the entryway was to the east, when one comes into them from the outer courtyard. In the width of the stone wall of the courtyard toward the east, before the separated area and before the building, there were dining rooms, and there was a way before them like the appearance of the dining rooms that were toward the north. So their length was, and so their width was, and all their exits were alike, and their plans alike, and their entrances alike. And like the entrances of the dining rooms that were toward the south was the entrance at the head of the way, the way before the corresponding stone wall toward the east when one comes into them. And he proceeded to say to me, the dining rooms of the north and the dining rooms of the south that are before the separated area, they are the holy dining rooms where the priests who are approaching Jehovah eat the most holy things. There they deposit the most holy things and the grain offering and the sin offering and the guilt offering, because the place is holy. When they, the priests, have come in, they will not also go out from the holy place to the outer courtyard, but there they will deposit their garments in which they customarily minister, for they are something holy. They will clothe themselves with other garments and must approach to what has to do with the people. And he finished the measurements of the inner house, and he brought me out of the way, out by the way of the gate, the front of which was toward the east. And he measured it all around. He measured the eastern side with the measuring reed. It was 500 reeds. By the measuring reed, round about, the reed was 6 cubits, by the long cubit, as we read before. He measured the northern side, 500 reeds, by the measuring reed, round about. the southern side, he measured 500 reeds. By the measuring reed, he went around to the western side. He measured 500 reeds. By the measuring reed, for the four sides, he measured it. It had a wall all around, so 500 times 6 cubits was its four-square dimension, which would be 3,000 cubits. It had a wall all around with a length of 500 reeds and a width of 500 reeds. To make a division between what is holy and what is profane. So it's a four-square wall, which is 500 reeds or 3,000 long cubits to a side. That's what it sounds like. That's the end of our study. For today, we've got just a minute or two. I want to talk about, this what Dr. Jamnadas talked about. He is the cardiologist who talks about fasting as a cure for type 2 diabetes. But there are other experts, too, who are expert in that area who also mention that. Where is it? Don't know if I have it here. Is this it? I think it is. Fasting for survival. This is the reverse image because the video is reversed here. The colors are inverted. But Fasting for Survival is his lecture. Dr. Pradeep Jamnadas, I think is his name. I'm not sure if the pronunciation is correct, but he gives a very interesting lecture on fasting for survival. You can search and find that, possibly on YouTube. Hopefully you can. But he talks about all these diseases, including cancer, as being progressive stages of the same disease caused by too much food or eating, too much of certain types of food. But mainly just overeating is what causes all these illnesses, is what he maintains. And he is an expert, because he has to do heart surgery on people who develop these problems, and then he has to try to help them so that they don't continue needing more surgery. But he's a conventional doctor. He also uses drugs. I don't recommend. Jehovah doesn't approve of drugs, so we're not saying drugs are the way to go. It's just fasting is something anyone can do. Something to consider. That's the end of our study for today. It's February 3rd, 2024 of the Common Era. It is 2028 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you. And in my behalf, I'm very pleased also to spend time with you today. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty and Cassie saying bye for now.